Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimebo.
Hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds, and joining me bright and very early from Canada is my usual partner, Jeff Rimebold. Our studio is proving as elusive as Bill Belichick in a Deflategate press conference, but we're going to get there, so bear with us. Jeff, draft is just a few days away now, and this is always an interesting time because you wonder if teams start to show their hands a little bit. You start to see players rise. I've seen Todd Gurley linked with Jacksonville all the way up at number 3 with Miami at 14. This is a time where it's interesting, but also I guess if you're in the buildings like you are, you don't believe everything you hear.
No, there's an awful lot of disinformation at this point, too, because teams are hiding as best they can, you know, their cards, if you want to say it. You know, it's like a poker game, and they want to keep those cards close to their vest. Other teams, interestingly enough, will come out and basically advertise what they're doing, because they're, you know, I've heard a couple of GMs, Neil, say that, you know, they're sitting by the phone taking calls. I'm here, I'll take calls on this pick or that pick. So it comes down to, you know, who wants to move off a pick, who wants to move up, who wants to move down, and who wants to try and ensure that they get the worst information out there for their opponents.
All right, let's start with a look at some of the news then. We're not going to do our state of the franchise again. We're going to take a break from that this week. We are going to look at some news. We are going to look at defensive players in the draft, and then we're going to take your questions in the mailbag. Of course, the draft from midnight on Sky Sports 1 on Thursday. In terms of where you can catch up with myself and Jeff, I'll be on that broadcast. Jeff, you're going to be tweeting throughout the draft, aren't you? Live tweeting, and people can ask you questions as you're going along.
Right. We're going to be here. We've got OTAs that will run until Wednesday evening. So Thursday night, I'll be on the computer. I'll be tweeting, and we'll kind of go round by round. As you break them down, Neil, we can discuss them on Twitter, and we'll stay with you through the whole first round.
And then myself and Jeff will be back next Friday to look back at round one with an extra edition of Inside the Huddle podcast. And then next Tuesday, we'll look back at the draft as a whole. So let's get some news then, and it relates to the draft with the news that Shane Ray, one of these top-rated edge rushers out of Missouri, has been arrested or cited for marijuana possession, Jeff, in the worst possible timing department. This can affect Shane Ray's status, can't it? When we look at the heightened awareness of what happened to Johnny Manziel in Cleveland last year, what the Browns have now at wide receiver with Josh Gordon suspended, these issues are real and are going to possibly affect his stock.
You know, what happens with these kinds of things, Neil, is, you're talking about a guy's ability to make life decisions off the field. And the distractions that are, available to a professional football player, an NFL first-round draft choice, are incredible. And if you're not even there yet, and especially when you're in the 90th meter of a 100-meter race, and you decide to make this kind of a choice, it says all the wrong things about you as a player. And it's so highly competitive. Shane Ray was not a guy who didn't have warts on him. I mean, there were things that people didn't like. He's stiff. He doesn't have great size. There were some things that he was getting degraded or devalued for anyway. Now, why would you go out and make a decision like this to give GMs another opportunity to move you down the board? It just really, really bad decision in this kid's case.
I was reading his story, Jeff, and he has got it was a long road to the NFL. One of these sort of troubled stories. Overcame, grew up in an area of Kansas City known as the Murder Factory, and escaped that. And you feel like you're almost there. You've almost got yourself to that point where you're going to change your life, and then, like you say, it's a decision that goes against you. Of all the times, did you need it that bad? Did you need to be in possession of this marijuana that bad this week of all weeks? I mean, it's just so frustrating. I saw within the story it was talking about, well, his draft stock might be dropping anyway because he requires toe surgery and he might be out for 5 weeks. But I thought about that and I thought, well, you're drafting this guy for 10 years, so you're not going to worry about that. But the marijuana stuff is going to be a concern.
Yeah, because, and this is one of the reasons why they do so much background work on these guys. We saw, you know, in the Hernandez case, a guy who couldn't escape his past, who couldn't escape his background. And you know, it's so unfortunate because these guys have so much to gain in this next little while. And their lives, they can change not only their lives, but the lives of their children and their children's children with the money that's available to these guys today in their second contracts. And, you know, how unfortunate that, as you say, you know, riding around with a bag of weed in his car is you know, I guess more important to him than doing the right things as we, you know, get within 72 hours of the draft.
Jeff, you mentioned misinformation. I'm going to read two headlines. You can tell me if there's truth to this or if it's misinformation. The Cowboys are not in the running for Adrian Peterson.
You know, that to me is misinformation, because I think the Cowboys are in the running for anything or anybody the Cowboys choose to be in the running for. And it just comes down to, you know, what Jerry wants. And you know, they obviously have to work within the cap like everybody else. But, you know, certainly one of the toughest teams to forecast what they're going to do around this time is the Cowboys. So I would take anything that's said about them, unless it comes directly from Jerry, and even a percentage of what Jerry says, with a grain of salt.
All right, here's one more for you. The Chargers haven't discussed Rivers' trade with any team.
I think that's complete disinformation. You know, what I hear from people that are in the business is that they are willing at this point. They're at an impasse with him in a contract.
Yeah, so maybe reluctantly they're doing it.
Yeah, I don't think it's a – you never want to get rid of a franchise quarterback. And again, we've talked about Phillip Rivers a lot. He is one of the top quarterbacks in the National Football League. I don't know if he's an elite quarterback, one of the top franchise guy. But they've got to look at the long term for their team. And if they can't get him under contract, and this move to L.A. is looming out there as a negative in that negotiation or possible negotiation, then they've got to understand it's risk versus reward. If you could trade him to get at one of these two what are considered top quarterbacks in the draft, then that's certainly something I'm sure Tom Telesco and Mike McCoy are entertaining.
Okay, let's move on then to defensive players in the draft. And Jeff, we're going to talk about these guys position by position, but broad question to start things off, who's the best defensive player in this draft for you?
Well, you know, to me, when you start talking about the best defensive player, it's a little bit like, you know, who's the prettiest girl at the dance, right? I mean, you like blondes, hey, then she's the prettiest one. You like brunettes, then go there. You want a redhead, then go there. But when it comes down to it, you want, in the draft, you want a guy who can give you the most and a guy who has position flexibility. And I think for my money, Leonard Williams out of USC would be the guy that I would say is the best defensive player in the draft. Because, and here's why. He can play a number of positions. If you're a 4-3 team, he can play the over tackle, the pass rushing tackle in the 4-3. He can go outside to end on rundowns. If you're a 3-4 team, he's big enough to play end. He could even play that elephant backer position that some of the, you know, different, the variations of the 3-4. So at 6'5", 300 pounds, he's big enough to play inside. He's fast enough to play outside. There are so many things about him. He runs 4.9. He's like I said, 300 pounds. Was a dominant college player. And, you know, one of the things I really, really like about him is, Neil, when you look at his career, when you look at his body of work, there were a number of games that he played last year as a senior, as a college junior, that he was hurt. And instead of begging out and saying, well, you know, I don't want to affect my draft stock, I don't, you know, I'm a little concerned about this injury or that injury, he played through a bad ankle injury. Yeah. And, you know, just continued to fight and showed his toughness. He played Stanford, and that's a big rival game for USC and a big game in the Pac-12 standings. Rolls his ankle a couple days before the game. Doesn't ask out, plays hurt the whole game, and that really says something. If you're a football guy, that says something to you, because you know, Neil, in the National Football League, once you get to week six, everybody's hurt.
And you can't make excuses, right, Jeff? There are no excuses. If you go out there and play, then you better perform. And he had ankle and shoulder injuries, and he still had 80 tackles and 7 sacks. So that backs up what you're saying.
Yeah, and for a guy that's 300 pounds to have 7 sacks, that's an impressive number. And so, you know, I listened to Brian Kelly, the head coach from Notre Dame, talk the other day, and he was, you know, talking about the best players that they played last year. And he said Leonard Williams was the only defensive lineman that they played. And they play good competition now. The only defensive lineman that they played that they had to have a separate game plan for. And that, again, that speaks volumes to the kid. Now, at every position in this draft, there are really fine players. But to me, he gives you the most position flexibility. And any team in the draft that's looking for defensive line help would be wise to take this kid.
Jeff, I did a mock draft for SkySports.com this week, and I got to number 3, and I'd had the 2 quarterbacks go off the board, and then I was toying with Leonard Williams or Dante Fowler for the Jags at number 3. I mean, Jags could still go Amari Cooper or a wide receiver. But part of me was thinking, and I wanted to get your thought on this, part of me was thinking that if you have a disruptive defensive lineman who you can move all across the front, so if he becomes Gerald McCoy, or if he becomes anything close to Ndamukong Suh or somebody like that, is that more value than a Terrell Suggs or a Von Miller, or again, does it depend on the team? I'm just wondering if there's more value to having that game-breaking defensive lineman as opposed to an edge rusher.
Well, you know what, when you look at the, particularly when you talk to Jags and you look at their scheme, the ideal player for them would be a Michael Bennett type guy,
right,
who can play outside in rundowns. Then you put him down at over tackle in pass downs because he's so slippery and he's so much of a, he can out quick guards, and he can, you know, he's strong enough to play against the tackle in a run situation. That's why Leonard Williams, to me, is a guy that they're going to seriously have to contemplate with their pick. I think I agree with you. If those quarterbacks go off early, I look for the Jags to take a defensive player with that pick. And I think, you know, they're going to make a decision based upon what, you know, they look at their roster. Do they feel strongly enough that they're good enough inside at those two tackle positions? If they do, then Fowler becomes the guy. It's to me right now, those guys, if you're the Jaguars, you're looking at that and you're saying, these are the best players. Which ones fit a need for us? Where's the greater need for us? Is it the edge rusher, or is it that guy that you talk about right there, which is Leonard Williams, that has the flexibility to play all across the front?
All right, so let's break some of these down then, Jeff, and we'll look at the defensive linemen, including Leonard Williams, although we've done him a lot, but There's a new category now. I mean, it's been this way for a few years, but we're not talking defensive linemen, linebackers, and then defensive backs anymore. So let's start with edge rushers, because back in the day, I can remember when I was following the draft as a fan, and then I first started out working for First Down newspaper, so I'm going back a while. But if you were described as a tweener, that was a bad thing. But these edge rushers are all essentially tweeners, right? I mean, but in today's NFL, they have a first-round value on them because, okay, so they're not strong enough to set the edge and defend the run yet. Do you care if they get you 10 or 12 sacks? I mean, this is a position in its own right now, isn't it, edge rusher?
Exactly, and the reason for that is what? It's because the game has evolved, right? You know, in the past, when you talked about the tweener was that guy that, what do we do with him? Mm-hmm. Because he's got to play the run twice before we get to third down where we can get him in the game. So he was not a value guy. It's the same thing. The game changes. As for example, we talk about running backs. As the value of running backs has gone down because the league has become more of a pass-first league, well, you know, the same thing now occurs on the defensive side. It's all hooked together. So now defensively, the prime thing you're looking for is guys who can affect the passing game, and that's corners and rushers. So you look at the rushers that are in this draft, and I think that defensively, there are spots in this draft where it's a weak draft, but one of the places where it's deep and it's very good is at the edge rush positions. And you mentioned the guy to me that's the best of the bunch is Dante Fowler out of Florida. I mean, there's a guy, you know, all the things you look for, the dimensions, 6'3", 261, got great wingspan. He runs 4.6 flat 40, so he's got almost running back caliber speed. And, you know, that's incredible. Even more impressive is his start, right? Again, the 40, I think, can be – I'm not a big 40 guy.
Right.
But what I believe in is, especially when you start looking at this position, what's the guy's get-off? What's his start?
Yeah.
How fast can he get up the field? And his 10 time, his 10-yard time of 1.59, that's blistering fast. He is extremely quick. He's what they call twitchy. In the, you hear scouts talk, and they say, well, the guy's got twitch. He's a twitchy player, which means he's quick, and this is he's quick and strong. So Fowler plays violent.
Yeah,
he's not a finesse rusher. He's a violent,
very
rusher.
Energetic. Jeff, that's really interesting what you say actually, because it shows that the 40-yard dash is not for every position. Because if you're an edge rusher and you're having to sprint 40 yards, well, that means your defense has just given up a big game. So, I mean, it's not for everyone, everything. So you do have to take each player into account. I was impressed, Jeff, when I looked at him, and I made a couple of notes. So I watched him playing against Florida State. You try and watch him against good opposition, you know, and see, he played right defensive end, left defensive end, outside linebacker with his hand off the dirt. He was an inside linebacker blitzing up the middle. He even was like, it looked like a sort of lightweight defensive tackle on a couple of plays. I mean, there's versatility here as well. And maybe that speaks to maybe the intelligence of the player. I mean, how he's used by his coaches, obviously. But he's also, he was able to adapt and you do different things in those positions. And when I think back to someone like Jamie Collins at New England, who can move around a formation and be a chess piece for the defense, Fowler could be that.
Yeah, and you know, you look at him statistically and the production, right? You're always talking about production. You know, again, it's a little bit different when you get to this point in the draft, right? Or this point of stacking your board, which is what they're all doing right now. You're really starting to look at little fine things, and the scouts, particularly the lower level scout, the scouts that do most of the information gathering, they're numbers guys. They're looking at height, weight, speed, you know, all that stuff. But the coaches really want to watch the tape. And when you watch the tape, you see a guy who has 8.5 sacks on the season. Not a huge number, but what you see is a disruptive force, you know, against teams. He's constantly harassing the quarterback. And then the other thing that I like about this guy, Neil, is he's got 60 tackles. He plays the run. He just doesn't run up the field, you know, and they run the ball up underneath him, and he quits on plays away from him. He plays hard. I mean, you watch the LSU game. If you want to watch this kid, watch the LSU game. And he's playing against Lyle Collins, and he gets 11 tackles and a sack in the game. And, I mean, he plays to the point of exhaustion. I love the kid's motor.
Jeff, I watched Fowler against Florida State, and then I watched Vic Beasley against Florida State. Actually, Beasley, who is in that next group of edge rushers, I mean, there could be as many as five going in round one. Beasley actually caught the eye a little bit more. I mean, he was probably a little bit rawer, but there was nothing in terms of, you're not drafting him to defend the run. But he certainly caught the eye as a pass rusher. How do you rank the guys that are below Fowler? And I guess then you've got some question marks now around Shane Ray, as we've already discussed, and Randy Gregory, who failed a drugs test at the combine.
Yeah, I think Beasley's the next one. Beasley's a little bit of a different animal to me than Fowler.
Yep.
In that, you know, Beasley's only 246 pounds. They're both 6'3", but you're talking about almost 20 pounds difference in the two of them. And they play a different style of game. Beasley is more of a run and chase guy who relies on his speed. He's got to get stronger. I could see Beasley in a 3-4 being a Will backer and, you know, being that guy who can drop. He's a better speed guy than Fowler is. He's probably more adept at getting into coverage and doing those kinds of things.
He collapsed like a house of cards in the running game. If the lineman got on him, it was like, you know, he is one-dimensional at the moment.
Yeah. And that's where, you know, you look at him and and you say, okay, this is just what we talked about, right? he had 12 sacks, you know, only had 33 tackles, right? That's that correlation, those numbers right there. We're talking about in Fowler, you had 8.5, but you had 60 tackles. Fowler's a much more play both downs better, plays the run better. But again, you look at Beasley has 21.5 tackles for loss over his career, so he's an up the field player. Mm. He's not a guy you want in there when the counter comes at him and that 340-pound guard's coming to kick him out, because he's going to kick him out. He might kick him into the third row. But, you know, he doesn't anchor well yet. He's got to get stronger. He's a typical Clemson kid to me. They come out, they get great athletes at Clemson, but they tend to come out of there a little raw. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think he's going to have to grow as a player, but has all the physical tools if he'll get in the weight room and he can get stronger. That's what they hire strength coaches for.
Yeah, and I guess Randy Gregory's that way as well. He's only 235 pounds. You know, there's talk of him needing to get stronger, and there's some concern about his lack of weight. I mean, there have been some good players who've played on the edge, or, you know, in between that sort of linebacker and defensive end role. Jason Taylor was only about 240 pounds when he played in Miami. I mean, is Randy Gregory... is the size a concern, or is it more, I guess he's a test case for this off-the-field stuff again?
Yeah, you know, here's the thing with Randy Gregory. When you look at him, it's not his weight or any of that stuff, even though he is a lean guy at 235, at 6'5". It's, you know, you look at him and you see a much more finished player than Beasley.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say he's been better coached. I think that's unfair. But you just see a guy who has... all of the things you look for. He understands how to set up offensive linemen when he rushes him. If the guy sits deep, he'll power rush him. If the guy quick sets him, he'll run around him. He's got, you know, for a college kid, he's got a, you know, pretty good repertoire of moves. Mm. It's the off-field stuff you go. First of all, you fail a drug test at the combine. You know you're going to get drug tested at the combine. How can you fail it at the combine? Mm. And then additionally, when you get in your interviews, you say you constantly smoke weed at Nebraska. you go, what?
Yeah.
And I mean,
some teams just won't bother with that, Jeff. It's just not worth the effort, because you're not going to get. Look, Justin Blackmon was a high pick for the Jags. He's not been anywhere near that team for 2 years. Like, go back to Josh Gordon. I mean, there's some teams are just going to say, do you know what? This guy's going to be with us for a year or two, and then he's gone. So what's the point?
Yeah, and then do you want all of the other stuff that comes with that? Mm. Those owners, I mean, you got to understand, these guys, they paid big money for these teams. I'm talking about big money. Mm. And now you want some kid that you draft to be in the news for the wrong things? At some point, the teams are just going, they're throwing up their hands and saying, it's not worth it. It's just not worth it. Mm. And, you know, now you got Shane Ray situation, where here's another guy with great, I mean, you look at him and you say, yeah, the guy has some pluses. I thought he was I'd put him at both Ray and Gregory below the other guys.
Yeah.
But I did it in Gregory's case because of the off-field stuff. In Ray's case, I initially did it because he's a little bit stiff. You know, he's not the athlete that those other guys are. He's not as fast as they are. He's a relentless player. I mean, he is a tough kid and plays hard. But he's also a guy that when you run at him, he's not quite the player he is when he can, you know, just pin his ears back and rush. But now you go and throw a drug thing in there on top of it, and, you know, again, I would say he could slip. I would not be surprised if he would slip as far as the late second or third even.
Wow. Jeff, just you raise an interesting point there, and it's something I noticed when watching film on some of these younger guys, and I wonder if you've seen it on the field, whether it be in college or the CFL or your time in the NFL. You said about limited number of moves for some of these pass rushers, and I noticed that as well. I mean, is it something that grows with experience? I mean, have you noticed that when you've been on the field, that young guys, you know, they haven't got all of the moves? They come with maybe two or, you know, a couple of moves, but they need to expand on that.
Well, I think when you look at, say you take a kid like Beasley, who has such great first step. He's so fast up the field. He can rely on one move. Right. And I know when I was coaching defensive linemen at Hawaii, and we had two kids, Mel Purcell was drafted by Cleveland, and Akai Kalama Francis by Detroit. When I was coaching those kids as college players, I wanted them to only have a move and a counter.
Right.
Because to develop a number of moves takes a long time. It really is, you know, some kids, I watch some young players play, and they're trying things that they have no business trying. They're not there yet. Now, when these kids come to pro football and they get their defensive line coach has them all the time, and they, you know, it's a job. It's you're with them all the time, and every day they're, you know, building their game, and then the OTAs and the off season and da 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 da.
Yep.
Then they can fine tune and develop moves. To me, I like to see a kid come with a good base understanding when to use power, when to use speed, and then tailor moves that suit him. A long arm guy may be more of an arm over guy. A shorter leverage guy like Ray, he may be a rip and get underneath you guy.
So it's not a knock on them, Jeff. It's probably how they've been coached at that time.
Yeah, and again, it's because they're so – usually what happens – players can be trapped by their ability.
Yeah.
And when I say that, you can have so much, you can be so good at one thing, you've been gifted so much in one area that you can just rely on that. Well, then when you get to the next level, you have to develop and continue to refine your game. And that's, again, that's what, you know, the coaches are there for.
Yeah.
And you look at a guy and say, okay, now, can he grow as a player? So that's why I had a little bit of a knock on Ray. He's never going to get unstiff, right? He's never going to all of a sudden be a fluid athlete.
Right.
That's just not who he is. So, again, that's where you sometimes will knock it or grade a guy down a little bit.
Yeah, it is interesting because you can. There are certain things you can coach. So you could coach a receiver to run better routes, to work better at recognizing coverages. You can't necessarily coach a receiver to be tough and brave going over the middle, can you? So there's certain things you can coach and certain things you can't.
No, and you know, as while we're on these edge guys, there's a kid.
Yeah, anyone else?
I would encourage fans to kind of keep on your list a little bit. If your team needs an edge rusher, now he may not be a first round guy, although sometimes you get a run on a position and guys will overdraft the guy
yeah.
a little bit. But there's a kid, Eli Harold at Virginia, if you're a 3-4 team, that I think fits you really good. He's, again, in that 6'3", 247 category. He's 4'6". You know, here's some numbers, just raw numbers. 14.5 sacks, 54 tackles. Puts him up there with the elite players. And you watch him against good competition, and he plays well against good competition. Didn't play in a college program that gets a lot of, you know, publicity, but I think he's a guy that may, as Ray and Gregory, the questions with their decision-making off the field, Harold may be a guy that slips up in there and certainly would be a value pick in the second round for anybody that's looking for an edge rusher.
All right, let's move on to defensive linemen, Jeff. And I guess you value these depending what you're looking for. If you want a space-eating nose tackle who's going to be strong against the run, or you want somebody like a Leonard Williams or a project like Arik Armstead out of Oregon, it depends what you are looking for as a team, what you need, what kind of system you run. Some of these guys are very different players. You know, you get a someone like an Eddie Goldman at Florida State is that kind of Vince Wilfork, eat up blocks, you know, allows others around him to make plays. He's never going to wow you from a stats point of view, as opposed to a Leonard Williams who did have those good numbers you talked about. So we've talked about Williams a little bit. Who else do you like in defensive linemen?
Well, I think, you know, Danny Shelton at Washington is a guy that you look at when you're talking about in nose tackle, you know, the under tackle, which is I don't want to get into too much technical football on the show, but he's the guy that plays away from the three technique. He's usually in the gap between the center and the guard, or on the guard, or shade of the guard, the center. He's a guy that you look at and doesn't run well, you know, but when you watch him in position drills, he's got that certain thing that a lot of those Polynesian players have. He's extremely quick with his feet. He's got great balance. He's got great hands. He's a relentless, physical, tough kid. I think he's a guy that definitely can, you know, if you're looking for a guy, say for your example, you're Detroit and you're trying to mitigate the loss of Fairley and Sue, Here's a guy I think that's a plug-and-play guy inside. That's not easy to do, you know, to have a plug-and-play guy inside. I think he's going to be a day-one pick. I really, really like him. I think I root for the kid a little bit more than other people just because I know his story. Growing up in an extremely abusive home in Washington, father was just a really tough situation. High school coach befriended the kid and Danny says she saved his life. I don't know if it's that dramatic, but certainly Danny then became the head, you know, basically the head of the household, graduates early from Oregon, all Pac-12 student, all the things that you want. Now, you want to give a guy money, give that guy money, right? So I really like Danny Shelton as an inside guy.
Yeah, comes from a troubled background. He saw his brother shot and killed right in front of him when he was growing up. And, yeah, he's been described as a safe pick, Jeff, which is, you know, sometimes that's not a bad thing to have a safe pick. Who else do you who else catches your eye? I want to ask you about Armstead.
I like Goldman. You mentioned Goldman.
Yeah.
I like Goldman. I like Goldman because, you know, he's a rare combination. You know, you got that 336-pound body at 6'4". And, you know, he didn't do anything at the combine because of hurt. He was hurt. But, you know, he's a guy that has the ability at that size to play across the line of scrimmage. You see him get in the backfield. You see him sack the quarterback, you know, and he makes critical plays. He makes big plays at the right time. And, you know, so I think he's athletic enough to be a pass rusher from in there, and he's going to always be that real physical, stout point-of-attack guy. You know, you always worry about a guy's weight, you know, when they're 336. Those big guys, you know, they don't get big because they're eating salad. I mean, you gotta watch those guys a little bit sometimes. So, but I like him, and you know, if you're looking for that over tackle, I think, again, another value pick guy that'll maybe, you know, maybe not in the first round, but certainly if you're looking for that guy in the second, or if you have two first round picks, you know, I like some of the things I see out of Malcolm Brown out of Texas.
Okay, a couple of other guys I wanted to ask you about, Jeff. You mentioned, I'll talk to you in a second about Arik Armstead out of Oregon because I think he's quite a fascinating player. But there's a guy called Jordan Phillips out of Oklahoma, and I've seen stuff where they're saying that he's 6'5", 329 pounds, and one of the biggest defensive players in the draft. Only Goldman and Ellis McCarthy topped that weight at the combine. But Jeff, I've seen stuff where they're saying that he would be or should be a top 10 pick because he's a freak of an athlete, but the effort is not always there. He's got a motor that runs hot and cold is what I've read a lot of. And I thought about that in your experience of working with, yeah, because everyone thinks back to Albert Haynesworth and what a talent he was, but only when he wanted to be. And is it unfair to label, you know, this on defensive linemen, or do we sometimes get this with the big guys where they don't switch it on all the time?
Well, you know what? If they don't bite you when they're puppies, they ain't going to bite you when they're big dogs. And I just think that's the way it is. You know, it's so hard to change a kid's desire to get to the football.
Yeah.
It's so hard to change how hard they play. And it's really hard to change it when they got $1 million in their pocket. Right?
Yeah.
Because if they're not hungry, if it's not a part of them, if it's not something in them that they have to get to the football, it's not like they need to get to the football. They don't want to get, they need to get there. There are guys who play that way, right? And they'd play that way if they're playing on the street. But then there are other guys that, you know, when the mood strikes them, they'll go. And, boy, you got to watch out for those guys because they will break your heart.
Yeah.
That's just been my experience with them. They'll break your heart. They're at the time when you need them to make a play, they won't play. I always, particularly when you're talking about big guys, right? When you're talking about big guys, you need big guys who play hard all the time. Not when, you know, like you mentioned, Albert Haynes was the perfect example. Could have been as dominant a defensive lineman inside in his era, and was when he chose to play. Now, there were other times where he just absolutely didn't show up. And those guys will kill you, and they'll get you fired.
Which is why we make no apology for loving J.J. Watt on this podcast.
Absolutely. Give me that guy.
And he's already been paid, right. Jeff.
Yeah, and give me McCoy. Give me those kinds of guys, right?
Yeah.
You can have all the guys with all the numbers and that look pretty and, you know, can jump this and run that and all that stuff, but then you put the tape on and the guy doesn't play hard.
Yeah. Armstead, 6'7", 292 pounds, Jeff. He's played, he wasn't a full-time starter until 2014. He played basketball at Oregon as well. I mean, he's raw. He looks quite lightweight, actually, when I watched the national championship game against Ohio State, and he does face a lot of double teams, so obviously teams are seeing that they have to account for him. Here, are we looking at, if you're an NFL team, are you enamoured by that 6'7", and I guess a frame that you can build on? Would you be drafting for potential here as much as anything?
Well, you're drafting numbers in this guy's case, in my opinion. You're drafting numbers. And for all of the numbers that you mentioned, 6'7", 292, 5.10, yeah. Let me throw some other numbers back at you. This is what goes on. This kind of discourse goes on between scouts and coaches at this time, right?
Yeah.
If I'm the D-line coach, I'm going to say, yeah, great numbers, right? He looks good in his underwear, but, you know, we ain't coaching underwear models. He had 37 tackles, only 2.5 sacks as a senior. He missed how many games because of an ankle?
Yeah.
Right? The same injury. Now, I'm not, again, and all injuries are different, but I'm just throwing this to you as a cautionary note. Leonard Williams is out there limping around against Stanford playing his ass off, and this guy, you can't get him on the field, right? What does that tell you about them? So, you know, again, that's where the scouts and the coaches oftentimes will go, and it'll get sometime into the category that I describe as a lively discussion between guys,
yep.
where it's just about I don't want to see his combine tape anymore.
No.
I'm not interested what his broad jump was.
Well, no, Jeff,
I want to see him handle the double team.
And at some point you want to see football awareness. And I looked at the measurables. He's 6'7". He's got really long arms. Do you know how many passes he batted down in 2014?
Nah, I have no.
No, none. I'd like to think that he had the awareness to be in the right position to use those physical skills to knock down a few passes here and there.
Well, and that's a skill that there's a certain knack to that. First of all, you got to get close enough to the quarterback to do it.
Secondly,
and then again, if he's not close enough to the quarterback, what the heck are we drafting him for? He's a defensive lineman, right? but you know, you look at that and you say, one of the reasons J.J. Watt knocks so many of them down, right? He has great timing, yes, and he's got long arms, yes, and he's got all this, but he is relentless.
Yes.
He needs to get to the quarterback, right?
Yep.
It's not some of these guys, I would take their locker. I would take Armstead's locker and I'd move it right next to the quarterback in the locker room, and I'd say, hey, at least now you're getting close to the quarterback.
Go on.
Because he spends too much of the game, you know, not at the quarterback, which is where you want him to be.
Any other defensive linemen before we move on to linebackers?
You know, I think that's pretty much the guys. Yeah. I mean, there's some guys that are in that category, but we're talking about first day guys, and that's about the extent of those guys.
So linebackers, will there be first day guys? I mean, this is a devalued position, but in draft terms, it is a little bit. I mean, we're talking about edge rushers, we're talking about defensive linemen. We're not talking generally about linebackers too much. Are there guys here that can go in round one?
You know, there's some kids that if it's a team that says I need an inside guy, you know, the Kendricks kid from UCLA,
yep.
McKinney from Mississippi State, those are two guys that as inside backers, but I don't think it's a particularly good inside backer class, first of all.
No.
And I think those two guys are really the extent of what I mean, they're good football players in there. You know, there's some guys that are going to be make teams certainly, and some will start in the National Football League, but when you're looking at a guy, you're looking for a guy that is going to come in and be an impact guy, early in his career. I just don't see it. You know, the thing you look at, there's a lot of reasons why Kendricks is, you know, played for Jim Moore in a pro system at UCLA. You know, he's relentless. He's short. That's 6'2", 232. That's not a prototypical inside linebacker. Mm-hmm. He's got a brother plays in the National Football League. He's got, he's an economics major, great kids. So he's supposed to have all that stuff going for him. But again, I can't get hot about the guy. He's not a guy that I put on the tape and I go, wow, give me that guy.
Yeah.
Right. He's a good football player. I'm not underselling the guy. And yeah. Certainly if you need an inside linebacker, that's a guy to go to. But it's not it's like I say, as a group, it's not a group that you go, wow, I'm just crazy about them, because all of them have a little bit, McKinney's bigger, 6'4", 246, and again,
a bit more old school, isn't he, McKinney?
Yeah, and that's the thing about, what do you do with these guys? Is he just going to be able to play for us on rundowns, or yeah. is he going to be agile enough and quick enough to handle all the pass drop stuff? And then you go to the third guy, and that's Denzel Perriman at the University of Miami. And again, you're looking at a 5'10" kid.
Yeah.
And you always worry about with those guys that they just get covered up by those 6'6" offensive linemen and get swallowed inside.
So Jeff, if McKinney and Perriman come off the field on passing downs, maybe somebody who comes on is this Shaq Thompson out of Washington. I mean, he's played a bit of outside linebacker, safety. He also played running back. I mean, we're just looking at an athlete there, aren't we? But again, it's going to depend where he fits for whichever team drafts him, isn't it?
Yeah, you know what? That's both a curse and a blessing, right?
Yeah.
Because it's a blessing that he's played and has played a number of positions, offense, defense, but he's really kind of been a master of none of them. And he will certainly be, I think, in my opinion, he'll be a good NFL player. And, a guy that you would take and say, we'll find a home for him. And, he'll play special teams and should be a dominant special teams player early in his career. And then we'll hopefully find a home for him. But because he did so many things at Washington, he really never had a chance to feature and grow in one position. So he's a guy that, like you say, he's intriguing because he does have that position flexibility, and it's just coming down to where each team sees him playing.
All right, let's move on to defensive backs then. Probably four or five guys that are the cornerback position who could go in round one, but not so many safeties, Jeff. And, when you look at safety in the NFL being such an important position now, this is a thin crop?
I don't like the safety group at all, personally. It's not that there aren't good football players there, but you mentioned how this position particularly has changed. And when you look at the safety group, it's not where are the cover safeties? That's the ones that you're looking for. Landon Collins probably is everybody's highest rated safety.
He's
the kid
a box
out of
safety,
Alabama,
isn't he, Jeff?
Yeah, and you know what?
More.
Again, same thing. I remember this kid as a high school player in Louisiana.
Yep.
He played at a high school just outside of New Orleans, between New Orleans and Baton Rouge, and I watched him play two or three times as a high school player, and obviously he was a phenomenal high school player, but you could see that his game was in the box, downhill, knock you out safety. Well, with the rules changes, those guys have become dinosaurs now.
There's only one, that's Cam Chancellor, is the only one.
Yeah, and so that's the kind of guy he has, and you look at him, and what's the knock? Well, the knock is when he gets himself in the pass coverage, when he's isolated one-on-one, that's where you see the holes in him. Mm-hmm. Obviously, he's a great tackler, he's physical, he's a leader, he's got all that stuff, and he ran 4.53, so he's got the speed that you look for. He's 228 pounds. He's physical. He's a Nick Saban coached kid, so he's going to be tough and he'll be fundamentally sound. But you just worry about what you're going to do with him when he has to go out and play. The kid that people are kind of interested about is Byron Jones, who had some great combine numbers.
He's played safety and corner, hasn't he, Jeff?
Yeah, and he's the guy that when you look at him, 6'1", 196. But has coverage ability. He's the intriguing one. Can he be that slot corner? Can he be that guy that has the length to go in there and play against some of those bigger slot receivers and to hold his own in man coverage, but yet is physical enough to tackle? Sadly, he did not play. I think he missed five or six games as a senior, and you know that kind of hurt his stock a little bit. But he certainly helped himself with his physical, you know, numbers at the combine.
So Byron Jones could be a safety or a corner. Let's look at some of the cornerbacks, and I'll start with Trey Waynes, Jeff, from Michigan State. I want to ask you your thoughts on him, but this is a stat that jumped out at me. So over the past two seasons, and he is a very good player, don't get me wrong, I'm just highlighting this so you can comment on it. He drew 9 penalties over the past two seasons, and if I understand correctly, in college football, you can keep your hands on the receiver until the ball's in the air, right? Which is longer than you can in the NFL. Are there more flags about to fly when he hits the NFL?
He'll have to grow. He'll have to learn that. He'll have to, you know, I mean, there's a pretty good corner that lined up for New England last year and was in Seattle before that.
Yep.
And, you know, and now,
gets some penalties.
Now Brown, he's in New Orleans now, and he's trailing flags.
You'd still take him, yep.
Yeah, exactly. And this kid I like because he's got the great catch-up speed, that 4.31 top-end speed.
Yep.
And he is one of those corners that just loves to play challenge man. He wants to be up in your face. He wants to play press. Michigan State is a program that lets their corners play like pro corners.
I was going to say, more team, you know, you've got to be able to do that, Jeff, now when you get to the NFL. You've got to be able to play man coverage, and you've got to be able to get in someone's face, haven't you?
Yeah, no question. And and he's also, this kid's tough. You know, he's 50 tackles. You know, you don't worry about him. There are corners who will play press, but you know, when the, you know, the bounce play or the sweep play comes their way, they look like matadors, not like football players. And so, you know, this is not one of those guys. He'll play physical. He'll get in there and tackle with you. And I like him. I like him a lot, and I think he'll be the first corner off the board.
After him, who you like?
You know, the guy that's creeping up the boards, and I hear people talk about all the time, and, you know, he's one of those kids that played at an off-the-radar program in college, was Kevin Johnson at Wake Forest.
Yep.
You know, again, six-footer and 188. Doesn't have great 40 time, which was kind of a knock against him, and he's not real big at 188 pounds. But when you watch him play, he really, you know, you look at him on tape, he's for a kid that's, excuse me, only 6 feet tall. One of the things they evaluate very closely, physical evaluations of a corner, is his wingspan. Because if he has long arms, he can play taller than he is, right? He's got more, he's got a greater range to touch the ball. And this kid has extremely long arms. He's got all the physical tools. He can play on drive, he can burst, he can close on the ball. He can do all those things. He's got better than average ball skills, too, and, you know, great hips. So he has all the physical tools, I think, to be the second corner off of the board, unless somebody takes Byron Jones and says, we're going to take him because he gives us more flexibility, can go inside and play nickel corner.
Then you get into the, I guess, if you want to take a chance department again, where Marcus Peters from Washington is a guy who's clearly talented, again, has that size, over 6 feet tall, is a physical style of player, but he was suspended for one game by his head coach in 2014. He had a tantrum on the sidelines, constant run-ins with the team, and eventually he was kicked off the team in college. But then I guess you pointed to Brandon Browner being somebody who draws penalties in the NFL. I would say Aqib Talib has been a physical corner who's had some off the field problems, but he's done all right for himself as well. So
yeah, you know what, and in coaching circles we talk about high maintenance positions.
Yeah,
right. When you're coaching this position, these are typically high-maintenance guys. They're not all, but the typically high-maintenance guys. Receiver's one of those. DB's one of those. And these kinds of guys that, you look at him and he has so much ability. But there's a lot of things here you don't like either. Like you say, not just one coach. If a guy has an issue with one guy, you know, that can be just a personality conflict. But when it's multiple coaches, then you start saying, okay, what's the issue here? Is he reluctant to being coached? You're going to get coached hard in the National Football League, let me tell you something.
Oh, yeah.
And if you can't take hard coaching, that's tough. You know, he's got children. You know, there's some things about him where you just go,
yeah.
But, again, when you look at him on tape, there's some times when you look at him and you go, man, oh, man, is he a good player. Jalen Collins at LSU, same guy.
Yeah.
You know, you look at him and you got all these off-the-field things that you're worrying about. And, you know, is he going to be a guy that, you know, that you can rely on? And so many times, you know, these guys can't get past their past. And, you know, you worry about him.
Yeah. Jeff, Collins is 6 foot one. Peters is 6 foot. Kevin Johnson is 6 foot, as you said. But we're now seeing this, you know, obviously the big receiver in the NFL is a wonderful weapon to have. Are we, you know, we're seeing the drafting here of bigger corners or corners with size?
Absolutely. You know, we talk all the time, Neil, you and I have had this discussion many times about how the National Football League is a copycat league.
Yeah.
You know, where one team gets successful with doing it one way, well, then everybody immediately wants to go out and copy that. Well, what team has had the most success, arguably, in the last couple of years? One of them is Seattle. Mm. And how did Seattle do it? They got long corners. Some guys that were not particularly highly rated guys.
Right.
In college, Richard Sherman is an example of that. You know, Sherman, I think the kid's name is, they got their nickel corner now, was hardly a starter at LSU, but he's 6'3". That's what they like. Now, people are starting to copy that because they're trying to create matchup, you know, trying to create matchups for themselves with all these big receivers.
Should we get into the mailbag, Jeff? Are we done with defensive backs, or is there anyone else?
Yeah, I think that's where you're going to look on the first day. Certainly, those will be the names that we'll be talking about. If you're a fan of a team that needs a corner, and that's just about everybody in the National Football League, nobody's ever got enough of those. You'd hope your team would take one of those guys.
All right, let's get into the mailbag then. Again, that was all our draft stuff leading up to the draft. It's on Sky Sports 1 from midnight. Jeff's going to be live tweeting throughout round one. Myself and Jeff will be back with a podcast on Friday and again next Tuesday. Let's get some questions then. This one, first of all, a nice shout out, Jeff, to Gary Pugh, who said, I know you saw this tweet, you replied last night. He said, I had an icebreaker at work today and we were asked, who would you invite to a dinner party? Me, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Reinbold. Cue some very quizzical looks. That's nice of Gary to invite us to dinner. Gary, you should know, I'm a notoriously fussy eater and a rubbish drinker, but I'll give it a good go. Question from Mike Wood, Jeff, who says, with all the recent trades and moves, who is the closest to the Patriots to becoming the number one team in the AFC East? This is an interesting question because it's the Buffalo Bills.
Stop. Would you stop?
What?
Would you stop? Because I know what you're fishing for. You just want me to say,
well,
Miami.
Hang on. I'm just going to say, the obvious answer would be the Buffalo Bills with all their moves, but I would take Ryan Tannehill over Matt Castle. So,
yeah, you know what? And that's the thing. You know, that's, if you say, you know, go back to, that's the rub, right? Now, you look at the two teams, and I give them both a lot of credit because both of these teams have said, we're going to go out and do what we need to do to make our football team better. And for all of the talk about LeSean McCoy and you know, Percy Harvin, and, you know, they had a great defense, yes, look at what Miami has done, you know. And I think that, you know, then you factor in the point that you just made, that all of the conversation in Buffalo now has interestingly changed to, what are we going to do at quarterback? What are we going to do at quarterback? Well, we're still not good enough at quarterback. You can have all the weapons in the world, but if you can't get the ball to them, you know, what are we going to do at quarterback? They're not asking those questions in Miami, and that's, I think, that to me, the Dolphins are such a, they're such a, you know, they're so neurotic to me sometimes. You know, you look at them and you go, it's their time. They should. I mean, I've, in the last couple of years, we've seen flashes where you go, man, they're ready to make that step, right? but they somehow never get there. If they don't do it now, then they got to really look hard in that franchise and see what the hole is, because you got a good enough quarterback now. You've put good players around him, and I think, you know, that certainly, to me, Tannehill is the edge when you consider Miami or Buffalo being the, you know, the 1B, if you will, in the AFC East.
Yes, we got there in the end. You said Miami in the end, right? Good man. God, you're all right, Belichick.
Pardon?
I said you're like Bill Belichick. I had to drag it out of you. Jeff, this is a good question. This is a good question, Jeff. This one from Ali Johns, who says, if college football is about preparing for the NFL, why don't all colleges run pro-style offenses? And this is interesting for 2 points, Jeff, because I wonder why a prospect like Marcus Mariota didn't find a college with a pro-style offense so that he then makes an easier transition. But also, college football is a big business, right? It's not about preparing everyone for the NFL. It's about winning on Saturdays, isn't it?
Yeah, it's about that. And you know, you realize that 2% of the players that ever, you know, play college football ever sign a pro contract. So it's not like they're in the business of churning out NFL guys. Right. The NFL has the best arrangement in any league, where they have basically a developmental league that's free for them.
Yeah.
Excuse me. But college football is about winning games on Saturday and filling stadiums. And you do that however you can do that. Now, what's interesting, there are some programs now, Stanford being one, when you're a young quarterback, if you're looking at going to play in a system, Michigan this way will be this way now with Harbaugh, Florida State is it with Jim, you know, with Jimbo Fisher.
Yep.
If you want to be a quarterback in the NFL, you have to consider those schools, because they will prepare you best. You won't come with the knock that Marcus has on him, that he's a quote system quarterback, he's a no huddle quarterback, he's never been, you know, in an environment where he has to huddle a team and lead them down the field and yada yada yada.
Interesting that he chose that system then, Jeff, because not many NFL quarterbacks have come out of that system, so he would have known,
you know,
he was an NFL caliber player.
If you ever went to the University of Oregon and saw their facilities, you would say, I can understand why a kid would come here.
Okay.
I mean, it is absolutely, Nike has bankrolled that thing, and it is absolutely beautiful.
Yeah.
I mean, it is individual climate-controlled lockers. Now, I'm telling you, right? The plasma televisions all over the place. I mean, it's unbelievable, their facilities. So you're a high school kid, and you go, and, you know, it's the flash and it's the sparkle that catches your eye.
Hugely successful program as well. Good coach there in Chip Kelly at the time.
You're going to play in a fun system.
Yep.
You know, you're going to throw for a bunch of yards. And, you know, so there are a lot of reasons why. But, you know, recruiting is so, if you think the draft is tough, you know, you got to go back now and start dealing with 17-year-old kids. Now you're really talking about erratics, and
yeah,
you know, it's hard to picture. Marcus Mariota was a good high school player. Now, he wasn't a elite recruited high school player. As a matter of fact, he was a guy that Oregon kind of found secondhand. They went to St. Louis to look at another player, and Scott Frost saw him and said, "God, this kid's pretty good."
Jeff, you've sat around those tables with those young prospects, talking to the parents as much as the kids. Does it vary from player to player, or do you say, "Well, we're going to give you the best opportunity to go on to the professional level"? I mean, I guess it depends who it is, right?
Yeah, when I was recruiting, particularly when I was coaching receivers with June, you know, you could sit in a room and you can sit in a parent's home and you could say, "Hey, listen, we have done this. We have turned them out. We have prepared them." You know, it's one thing to say you can coach a kid to help him get to the National Football League. It's another thing to say you have coached pro players. And that was always a big plus for us. And so when you have that ability, you certainly use that card. Now, you also have to understand that the reason that they're coming to school is to get an education.
I was going to ask you about that, Jeff. How much of that factors into the conversation, and how much are, again, it varies from player to player, I'm sure, but do some parents not be that bothered about that, and some are?
It's interesting when you talk to the kid. Most kids, when you talk about education, they go, yeah, I got you, coach, gotcha, right?
Right.
The mothers and the fathers, they want to hear about the education because they know what that, how that impacts a kid over their whole life.
Yeah.
You know, the kids sometimes, they want to know, well, who's your shoe contract with, Adidas or Nike? I mean, that's how they make decisions. You know, it's an incredible process. Recruiting is, I was good at it, frankly, but I'm going to tell you something. It's every kid's an individual case, and you better real early on in the interaction with them figure out what pushes that kid's hot button. And, you know, sometimes it's their girlfriend, so you recruit the girlfriend.
Yeah.
And because you know you're only going to see the kid, you only have an opportunity to see him once a week in the school. She's seeing him every day in school. And if she likes me better than she likes the guy from Oklahoma State, then, hey, we got a great chance.
Yeah. Jeff, fascinating stuff. Listen, I've learned a lot from you today, but you haven't taught me anything new when you said you were good at recruiting. You could sell sand to the Arabs, mate. I know that. That, I already know you'd be good knocking on my door. Jeff, that's us done, mate. Enjoy the draft.
All right, man. We got OTAs today, and get out there and run around with the players, man. It's a lot of fun, and look forward to the draft, Neil. Really look forward to it. We'll be hitting it from another angle from Twitter, but I'll be tuned into what you have to say and think, and then really, really look forward to Friday when
yes.
we can, you know, have another podcast and chew it all up.
Yep, absolutely. So we'll be back on Friday to dig into round one of the NFL draft. This has been Inside the Huddle in association with Sky Sports. .com and NFL UK until Friday, not next week, until Friday. Say goodbye, coach.
Aloha.